As Ed mentioned, we try to encourage everyone at the City Club to get involved in some civic or charitable way to give back. We're so blessed. And the person who I'm introducing now, between him and his wife, have really stepped up forward in connection with the Kennedy Forum. Not only have they given incredible amounts of money, but an inordinate amount of time. And we're so lucky to have him in our community. I'm introducing Peter O'Brien, and the brains behind him and the beauty is clearly Mimi. Mimi and Peter, give him a round of applause. Peter, you're on.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Jay. Jay and your board at the City Club have done so much for the city of Chicago in bringing these issues to the forefront. So thank you for this forum. About 5 years ago, my wife and I struggled with the illness of our son and his subsequent death. He suffered with schizoaffective disorder and co-occurring mental illness. Co-occurring alcoholism. The illness that was undiagnosed along with that was stigma. And that truly was the illness that stopped Peter from getting the care that could manage the schizoaffective disorder and the substance use disorder, alcoholism, that he suffered. And we lost Peter to a 12-year struggle after some 25 hospitalizations. But the stigma just kept him from getting the help that he needed that is out there. Shortly after his passing, I came home because O'Brien's restaurant is near our house in Old Town. And I just came home in the middle of the day, and my wife Mimi was watching Katie Couric on TV. And she was interviewing this congressman who was talking about his substance use disorder and his struggle with mental illness. I knew then that I had to do something, that it was, if we couldn't help Peter, there's so many others out there that suffer from this illness and that the stigma keeps them from getting the care that's already out there. So one of the first things that I did after conferring with my daughters who are here today, Caitlin O'Brien and Megan O'Brien, and my wife, I called my friend Jay Doherty and I said, Jay, I got to do something about it. And he said, well, you know what to do. So the next call I made was to Chris Kennedy. And I said, Chris, you've got this relative in another state. I forget what state it is, but I think we can do more here in the state of Illinois. Get me his number. Let me talk to him. So Chris Kennedy is the reason why we were able to form the Kennedy Forum of Illinois here. And I then called Patrick Kennedy, and we met. And I told him that I could get a group of individuals together here in Illinois that I think that we can make a difference. And while Boston is a great city, Chicago would be a great convening for the Kennedy Forum. And so my next call was to Ann Burke, Supreme Court Justice Ann Burke, along with Dr. Lori Jones, along with Mark Ishug. So please, the Leadership Council, the Board of Directors, and the Advisory Board that are here today, please stand up and accept the applause for all of the efforts and tireless work that you have done to bring this issue to the forefront. As I said, I watched a certain congressman on TV that morning and ended up calling his cousin and calling him. And I knew after watching Patrick Kennedy on TV that Patrick would be the remedy to stigma, to change how we feel and how society deals with this brain disorder. Nothing different in the body, the brain, the heart, any organ should be treated in the healthcare system equally. And because it wasn't and isn't, we have to do something about it. So I knew then that Patrick Kennedy was the remedy. So I give you the remedy, Patrick Kennedy.
Kennedy is the remedy. Don't forget, March 20th, Kennedy is the remedy. Okay, I try not to get into it too much. In any event, God is good. All the time. God is good. You can't help but feel like there's some great spirit when Jay Doherty, Ann Burke, everybody here is talking about celebrating the place where Special Olympics got its start. Soldiers Field, Chicago. That is God working on earth. Because that sport of inclusion and breaking down of stigma and shame and isolation, what it's meant for millions of families around the world who were able to come out of the shadows and no longer feel like they had to keep it a secret in their family that one of their relatives suffered from an intellectual and developmental disability, and to not only turn that around, but to make it something where they celebrated the challenges that their loved one faced on a daily basis, and then awarded them medals for all that they did to try to overcome those challenges. All of that started here in Chicago 50 years ago. And let's give another round of applause to Ann Burke and all those that were part of that. And I want to say I'm honored to be here. And Peter O'Brien, this really should be called the O'Brien Forum, Illinois. He's good enough to give attribution to the Kennedy name. And when you think about where we need to go with mental health, I called it the Kennedy Forum because John F. Kennedy has been the single most important president when it comes to articulating what this country's response should be to the public health challenges that are unaddressed within the mental health and addiction world. 50 years ago, he said when he signed the Community Mental Health Act, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, people with mental illnesses, as he said, need no longer be alien to our affections or beyond the help of our communities. And my friends, you cannot come up with a better statement of mission for this country than what he articulated over 50 years ago in terms of the challenge to deinstitutionalize people from what were then the asylums. But as we know today, those new asylums are our jails and prisons. And so you could easily take John F. Kennedy's statement on the signing of the Community Mental Health Act and apply it to what is the remedy, Peter O'Brien, for today when it comes to the challenges of addressing the public health crisis we're facing as a nation. It is community mental health. John F. Kennedy didn't say beyond the help of our psychiatric hospitals, although they're very important, and Lord knows we need to end the IMD exclusion. John F. Kennedy didn't say beyond the help of our psychiatrists. Lord knows we need more of them. It's impossible for anybody to get any appointment with a psychiatrist. There's too few of them. But he didn't say that. He said, beyond the help of our communities, because he wanted it understood in America that this wasn't someone else's challenge. It wasn't the challenge of the mental health quote-unquote, addiction treatment community. Because that's the way our country still thinks. We'll let them take care of it. No, the challenge, as John F. Kennedy stated it, was a challenge for the communities, which means to strengthen communities and the community supports for those who are facing challenges of mental health and addiction. And what do people need? Some need more supportive housing than others. Some need more supportive employment than others. Some need more medical attention than others. But the idea is that we treat and take care of whatever someone's challenges are based upon what their individual needs are. Just the way we would in personalized medicine when it came to cancer. We don't say chemotherapy for everyone. We said maybe there's a little chemo here. Maybe there's a little radiation here. Maybe we'll need surgery. Maybe we in this country treat the individual and their specific set of challenges. There's no one size fits all for treating other illnesses, and there shouldn't be for treating mental illnesses and addictions. And why that's so complicated for our policymakers is what the challenge of the Kennedy Forum in Illinois has been. And that is to better articulate what the policy should be here in Illinois when it comes to addressing the public health crisis that's not unique to Illinois. But certainly Illinois knows, like every other place, the challenges of the overdoses that are affecting this state and the challenges of untreated mental illness that are affecting this state. So I am often introduced as kind of Kennedy's the remedy in the modern era for mental health. And that is because basically no one else wants to be known as the mental health and addiction guy. I don't know why nobody wants that mantle. I don't know. I can't figure that out. All I know is that when I got to the Congress, as the youngest member of the Congress from the smallest state in the country and in the minority party, which basically put me at the lowest possible rung on the ladder of seniority, in spite of that, I got to put my name first on a bill called the Mental Health Parity Act. And we added and Addiction Equity Act as the process moved forward. But it should tell you something about stigma, shame, and silence that no one more senior than me was elbowing me at the clerk's desk to put their name first on the bill. Maybe they just didn't want to have their name associated with and the sponsor of mental health and addiction. And so I was given that dubious distinction because I had already been outed, if you will, as having suffered from addiction, a substance use disorder. You see, when I was in the state legislature in Rhode Island, I woke up one morning to find out that the guy that I had been in drug treatment with at 17 had sold his story about being in drug treatment with me to the National Enquirer for $10,000. If he had just come to me, I would have given him $20,000 to keep quiet. But I don't know. So I had no choice in that matter. It came out, that skeleton. I thought I was done. I thought I was finished. Until I went over to the owner of the equivalent of the Maggio's of Providence, Rhode Island. As you all may know, Rhode Island has the highest Italian-American concentration of any state in the country. And my kind of political godfather in Rhode Island was a guy by the name of Frank DiPaolo, Jr. And he helped me innumerable ways. And I was terrified about what he would think when he found out that the guy he had vouched for in the campaign was a drug addict. I was worried, you know, he'll definitely think this is the worst. How could you have shamed me like this? I went over to his house. He literally was stirring the pasta fagioli at his stove, and he wouldn't say a word. And then he turned around and he said, "That rat." And I didn't know what. I thought he was talking about me. I felt so bad about myself. And then he said something I'll never forget. He looked at me, he said, "Buddy, you want me to do something about this?" And I said, "No, I'm already a drug addict. I don't want to be a co-conspirator for murder. No, thank you very much." But I ended up winning that next election because he made it seem to folks that you could either vote for our boy Patrick or vote for the guy that's supportive of the rat. And, of course, that didn't go over very well. In any event, I was fortunate to fight this fight. The parity law says that whether you're inpatient in-network, outpatient in-network, inpatient out-of-network, outpatient out-of-network, or you need pharmacy or emergency room benefits, you must receive them with no pre-authorization, with no concurrent review, with no fail first, in the same way that you would receive treatment for cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, or any other physical health condition. And if there are greater obstacles, higher copays, higher deductibles, higher premiums, lower lifetime caps, if there's all kinds of medical management practices that are put in place to obstruct you or your family's ability to access treatment for addiction or mental illness in a way that would not be the case if it were some other physical illness, then you are in violation of what is known as a federal statute, no different than the civil rights statutes that say that separate and unequal are unequal. And this is the case in mental health. Separate standard of care, separate treatment, separate access to these services is illegal in this country. And yet, here in Illinois, it continues to go on. The Kennedy Forum Illinois published a very good paper. I encourage you all to go on the Kennedy Forum Illinois website. You'll see how often it is that insurance companies here in this state deny access to care for mental health and addiction. And all we're saying is, show us how you make your medical management decisions. And I will tell you, if a certain person that I know well, that I grew up with, that's my first cousin, becomes governor of the state, I can tell you I know this stuff inside and out. I authored the Foundations for Learning Act for families that come from high ACE score families. I authored the Positive Aging Act for senior citizens suffering from mental health. I authored the Nurse and Family Partnership Act, which has tried to eliminate fetal alcohol syndrome and drug addicted babies syndrome. I authored the Child and Adolescent Crisis Act, which is to loan repayment for those who go into mental health and addiction treatment, and we need more people. And the parity law. I know. Kennedy Forum Illinois knows what needs to be done. And I will tell you, what needs to be done is dramatic change in this state of Illinois. And the platform is there. And I will tell you, there's no way that this state is not going to become the leader in the country, the model and the beacon of what a mental health and addiction system ought to be, if that person I was mentioning, who happens to be related to me and is my first cousin and is on the ballot on March 20th, if he gets elected, I can assure you, because I will make certain of it, that these recommendations that we have made through the Kennedy Forum Illinois are recommendations that become law and all throughout the state, and opening up access to people who heretofore have not had access to those services. And it is a proud tradition that my cousin Chris and I come from. We're both humbled by it. And, you know, we both feel an obligation to do our best to try to take what was given to us and make sure that others have those same opportunities in life. And I thank you all for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Thank you very much. Okay, we have a number of questions, and we're going to end our program today. Father Ryan finally made it here. It's not easy to come down from Lake Zurich. A lot of traffic, huh? A little wet? But you're here, and that's the important thing. You're really here. We're glad to see you. So if anyone has any questions that you would like to have Patrick Kennedy address, just hold them up. Oh, and we'll try to answer as many of these as possible. Okay, let's get started. This is from someone named the Picking Me Foundation. You know, usually we don't answer questions unless someone puts their name on here, but we'll break this time. At what point in your life did you realize you could take the challenges you faced and use your experience to help others? Who was your biggest supporter in helping you through this?
Well, when you've suffered, you're amazed when you come out the other side that anyone has stuck with you. And I was humbled when Peter O'Brien said to me he wanted to work with me, because I wasn't feeling like I necessarily had my own legs beneath me. I was trying to, one day at a time, trudge the road of happy destiny, as we call it in recovery, but I was early on in my journey. And Peter and Mimi O'Brien said, we're working with you. I had these friends, Garen and Sherry Staglin, out in California, basically adopted me as well, said, let's do this together, let's work together. And of course, I've had the love and support of my wife and my family. And those supports and many others build a real bulwark that allowed me to move forward in my life, because I had a lot of people behind me. And that gives me the experience that others who are trying to get sober and get their lives on track, they need a number of supports. And we need to facilitate recovery centers. And we need to facilitate the culture of recovery. Because in addiction and mental illness, we focus all on the catastrophic and the crisis. But these are chronic illnesses, which means if you got them, you're going to get them again if you don't do what you need to do on a daily basis to prevent the reoccurrence. And our society has had a sick care-based mentality when it comes to addiction and mental illness, as opposed to a chronic care mentality. And we need to revamp our reimbursement systems to pay for chronic care management rather than crisis care management. And in that, we need to understand that it's not just medical care that's going to keep people strong and move them forward, but it's that supportive social supports that are going to help people get their feet underneath them and move on with their lives, like I've been blessed to do.
Thank you very much. This question is from Dave Hostetler, who's with the Above and Beyond Family Recovery Center. How do you recommend getting clients off of MAT? You may have to explain MAT for some of us.
So we obviously have 64,000 Americans dying of overdose every year, and it's climbing. In the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, we were losing 53,000 Americans. And it was so startling to policymakers in Washington, D.C., that we appropriated over $24 billion a year to tackle the HIV, as we should have. We are spending less than $500 million to tackle a crisis where there's 15,000 more people dying than AIDS in the top of the AIDS crisis, dying every year. They were spending $24 billion for HIV. They're spending less than $500 million for overdose. I cannot, for the life of me, understand why this could happen in this day and age when actually nearly every family in America can be impacted by this. So to answer this question, as I already did with respect to recovery supports, I think we need to practice what the evidence tells us. And the evidence tells us that it's not a one-size-fits-all recovery. And those of us who have made it out of the woods often are self-selective in terms of how we attribute our newfound sobriety to being in 12-step recovery. But I'm the first to tell you I wouldn't be here today if it hadn't been for medication-assisted treatment during my road. I was lucky enough to get a doctor who could prescribe Suboxone. So I didn't have to worry about detoxing or going through that pendulum of detoxing and then trying to get more, so to speak. Medication-assisted treatment is the evidence base. If we had a flu shot, you all know about the flu epidemic. Well, what did we do? We all made sure we got our flu shots. We have the equivalent of a flu shot. FDA is just about to approve it. They've already approved another one. The bottom line is you give this shot lasts however long the doctor wants. You can give various doses, weeks, months, and it will actually prevent someone from overdosing because of the medication blocks as an antagonist to the opioids. Now, why wouldn't we want to give that shot to every single person who's an addict in this country? Because of regulatory barriers. No else. And reimbursement. But when we give that shot, we need to wrap it around with social supports and recovery supports. That is the evidence base. Now, if some people need to stay on because they were addicted to heroin for a long time, then that's their journey. If some people, like myself, are able to titrate off, which is what I was able to do, then that's their journey. But we should not prescribe a one-size-fits-all for anyone trying to get out of the throes of the addiction cycle.
Thank you very much. Okay, this is from City Club member Terry Nugent. Terry, where are you? Right back there. Great. Now, I may butcher your question because you and I received the same doesn't write clearly or legibly back there in grammar school. So, is there an equivalent of the U.S. News and World Report, like they rate colleges and universities, of rehab facilities? If not, could the foundation spearhead such an effort to measure effectiveness?
We have no Angie's List, do we, for mental health and addiction? Boy, do we need it. We need a Consumer Reports that tells us where the most important decision, the most important dollar we spend in our lives is that dollar to save our family's life. And the notion that we have no idea what the recovery rates are of a given treatment facility should shock us. The notion that our insurance company gives us no feedback in terms of, okay, they're going to need, given our assessment of how long they were addicted, given whether they come from a family of addiction, given whatever their other characteristics are in terms of the trauma in their lives. In other words, assess severity and then determine how long do they need to be in an inpatient, and then when they get out, are they going to be given a handoff, which of course never happens, to chronic disease management? Because the real answer is longevity of chronicity of the disease and having the right treatment over the long haul, not the one moment in time do they get a little break. So all of that needs to inform our policy approach, because our policy approach will dictate what the reimbursement system will look like. And as we all know, follow the money. Follow the money. You want to change the system, change the financial incentives to pay for what we know has the greatest likelihood and probability of helping people achieve stability, one, and sobriety. And we need to do a lot. The current mechanisms, CARF and NCQA and Joint Commission, really don't do a decent job. There's a group called Treatment Research Institute in Philadelphia. You can Google them. They do a pretty good job. Treatment Research Institute, a woman by the name of Mady Chalk, runs that. They're very good. But we do need to do a lot better.
Okay, thank you. This is from City Club member Brian Israel with the River North Residents Association. Brian, where are you? Back there. Why is it so difficult for progressives to craft a concise and compelling message that would inspire voters and begin to rebuild the ranks of Democratic, capital D, office holders that have been decimated in recent years?
This is not going to be... I mean, I think that the way I look at this crisis of mental health, you could really look at it in terms of any other crisis in this country, which all stems from pointing the finger at the other, fearing the other, dismissing the other, denigrating the other, attacking the other, and denying the other. It's a survival of the fittest, and we're all going to be losers. So our message should be, we're all in it together. It's the story of our country. It means that all of us are going to thrive if we have collective security. You know, you might get moments of insight. When you have an addiction or mental illness, what you lose is the ability to see your current situation and analyze it soberly, literally and figuratively, and understand how sick you are. And, of course, no one else will tell you because it's all about denial. But we as a nation are in denial. We're in denial about the effects of denying the impact of global warming, denying the impact of the way we attack people simply because of the way they look, the denying people because they have a disease that we don't like or approve. So the real, I think, answer is a spiritual solution. And I'm not here to promote a religious solution, but I'm here to say that you know, Chris's father was as much a spiritual leader as he was a political leader. When he challenged this country over 50 years ago during his campaign for president, he was really speaking to a divided nation, much like the nation we're living in today. And his rhetoric was one like Dr. King, of bringing together the beloved community, that we cannot be free unless all of us are free, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, that we are all caught in the same inescapable web of mutuality, tied in the single garment of destiny. What affects one directly affects all indirectly, Dr. King. And that idea needs to be the supporting principle behind all political decisions. And if you get that principle right, if you get the values right, your political platform will write itself. And I think as Democrats, we need to be less about trying to check the box on all of these political issues so that we can get this group and this group and speak to the fundamental issue, which is a moral issue, and that is whether we're going to treat one another as we ourselves want to be treated.
We have time for one or two more questions. This is from Nellie Rowland, who's the president with Safe Haven. NIH does not include the behavioral health care continuum of care, which is community-based. Only medical and traditional expansive hospital care approach. How do we compare evidence-based if we don't include continuum?
It's a good question.
I think from my answers before, basically what I've said today, I've absolutely agreed in every aspect with that position. So the idea of the new frontier today is an idea where we take all of what we know, which we can really begin to understand better than ever before, and bring science to social science. Because you can have rigor in social science. You can have rigor and new biomarkers that aren't your blood biomarkers. But are you able to tell from how much you're using your phone, how much you're not moving around because your phone can get your geo access, how much your voice modulates, how much you're sleeping? By the way, you can begin to monitor all of these and actually track with greater proficiency how you're actually doing than you've ever been able to track someone's mental health by going to a therapist once a week. And so we need to revamp how we think about healthcare and mental health care specifically and look to these things. But technology is not reimbursed by insurance companies. For example, you could do therapy on your phone through Skyping, essentially. That's not reimbursed. All of these things need to be reexamined. And I agree, a lot of these social determinants are so crucial to someone's success in recovery.
Well, thank you. One last quick question, Congressman Patrick. How far will that Rhode Island basketball team go in the NCAA tournament this year?
All I know is I started at Georgetown, and then I basically failed out and transferred to Providence College. So I went from the Hoyas to the Friars. And Rick Pitino was the coach that year. And, of course, Providence College went to the Final Four that year. And I will never forget that what a difference having a college basketball team doing well meant to the college and to the community. And even though I had really no roots in Rhode Island, the fact that I was a Friar by dint of having graduated from Providence College was my single greatest asset when I ran for office. And by the way, there was another Friar I had on my side, and that was Billy Daly Jr. And if you can believe it, the way you can't make any of this stuff up. Billy Daly Jr. was my co-chair of my campaign for Congress in 1994. And, of course, his dad is working on that other person's campaign that is going to be running in the March 20th election. But and Chicago, they've always been close turnouts. So we hope you all make sure you turn out. And I thank you all for the honor of having a chance to speak to you today. And I really want to thank all of you for all that you've done for the cause of mental health and addiction. And I hope that you join us at Kennedy Forum, Illinois, and sign up and join Peter and Mimi O'Brien in this crusade. There's nothing more profound than them taking their loss of PJ, who was my paternal great-grandfather's name, who came from Ireland. You know, again, you can't make this up. And turning his loss into something where it's redeemed through the saving of other people who won't have to go through what he went through, because all of us said that this system that we're in now doesn't have to be the system that we have in the future. So let's all work to change it. Thank you.
Okay. Please don't leave us. Let's give him a big round of applause.